worship, and make your decisions on that basis.
Understood, Alex, Rieko replied, nodding her head in agreement.
The group, except for Julian, Cordelia, and Tatia, who Alex invited to remain, exited the suite.
"Tatia, I need to send a clear message about the change in the Freedom's status," Alex said.
"Agreed," Tatia replied.
She stared thoughtfully at Cordelia, who peered back at her with interest. Tatia imagined a new fleet organization. The massive city ship would be on its own, often far from the squadrons, and would require independent operational control. In addition, the vessel would be in charge of its own defenses. That would include Mickey's rail-capable beam weapons and a hefty squadron of travelers. The fighters would need their own wing commander, maybe even a group commander.
"I think Commodore Cordelia would be a good place to start," Tatia announced.
Cordelia glanced at Alex, who was smiling, and replied, "Couldn't have said it better."
"Admiral," Cordelia said, snapping a salute at Tatia, who smiled and returned the honor.
"You might need to rethink the Commodore's title in the near future, Admiral," Alex said.
"There's the question of what supply ships Harrigan and the Confederation might send to accompany their warships. Our new Commodore will need to have command over the support fleet."
"Agreed, Alex. If that happens, it'll be time to bump our new Commodore again," Tatia replied.
Tatia shook hands with Cordelia.
"Welcome aboard, Commodore," she said before leaving.
Renee hugged Cordelia and congratulated her, and Alex walked Julian and Cordelia to the suite's cabin door. Cordelia halted in the doorway and turned to Alex.
"From Box to Commodore in 2 decades. Thank you for freeing us," she said, pausing to gently kiss Alex's cheek.
Alex took the remainder of the day off, switching comm calls between Julian, Cordelia, and anyone else he considered appropriate to handle his queries. Later, Renee and he went to stroll in the ship's central garden, watch the fish in the ponds, and enjoy a couple of reality vids from Cordelia's display. Long ago, Cordelia upgraded her reality vid suite to include bio-ID recognition for key personnel. When Alex and Renee walked through the door, they weren't offered the menu from which to select a routine. Instead, lights dimmed, music played, and the couple was whisked away to a mysterious land of incredible landscapes and fantastical beasts that inhabited their scenery. When the routine ended, Alex and Renee wandered out of the suite in a daze.
"That was incredible," Renee said, hanging on to Alex's arm for support.
"Didn't see that one coming," Alex said. "I think this calls for a drink."
Success, Cordelia thought, reviewing the cam vid taken at the suite's entrance when she saw the couple's expressions. It had taken an extraordinary amount of computing time to research the concepts, configure the terrain, and design and animate the beasts. She had been determined to present Alex and Renee with an incredible memory. Unbeknownst to her, that vid routine would become one of the most popular pieces of entertainment for as long as the city ship sailed. Alex and Renee entered a small cafe on the other side of the Grand Park. They enjoyed a drink and decided to order a meal rather than join others for evening meal. After a night of entertainment and relaxation, the first thing Renee asked Alex to do when they regained their suite was to accompany her into the refresher. It was over an hour before they climbed out, exhausted and happy. The following morning, Alex met with Oluwole and Francis. Julian and Renee sat with Alex and listened with rapt attention to the story of their journey through Sol.
"An elected government with a constitution that they call the Idona Accord," Alex said, shaking his head in amazement when the ex-Earthers finished their story.
"I loved hearing how well our friends Patrice and Nikki are doing," Renee added. "A colonel and a rim governor."
"Interesting details concerning the probe," Julian commented.
"Esteban thought you might find the telemetry data fascinating," Francis said.
"It was the engineering team who believed the probe to be a later version than ours. In their opinions, design, maneuverability, and decision-making pointed to a superior model," Oluwole said.
"Let's put the probe and its destruction aside for a moment, Sayers," Alex said. "I'm more interested in your summations about Saul."
"Astonishing changes," Francis commented. "I wouldn't have thought it possible."
"You clearly started a societal revolution, Alex. I think the greatest trigger was the economic turnaround of Idona Station," Oluwole said.
"Not to mention that rebels and militia were working hand in hand with stationers," Francis added.
"Sorry to interrupt the conversation, Sayers, but is the gemstone dedication still there at Idona?" Renee asked.
"I'm sorry to say it isn't," Oluwole said, his hand to his face, shielding his reaction.
"No?" Renee asked indignantly. "I loved that tribute."
Oluwole unveiled his face, displaying a grin.
"It was moved to Earth, Renee. It sits in the main rotunda of the building where the assembly representatives work and meet. According to Nikki, every representative must pass it on the way in or out of the building."
"You risk my wrath, sir," Renee said, grinning, while pointing an accusing finger at Oluwole.
"Protect me, my leader, from this vengeful woman," Oluwole said, appealing to Alex and holding up his hands in terror.
"You're on your own there, Oluwole," Alex said, laughing. "Back to business, Sayers. What's your final opinion on Saul?"
Oluwole and Francis glanced at each other in confusion.
"If you haven't guessed, Sayers, Alex is requesting your decisions on whether Saul has achieved a level of democracy that warrants extending our technology to them," Julian said.
"If we don't help the Earthers and we lose to the Nual, Saul's present level of technology would doom them when the sphere arrived in system," Alex explained.
"What technology are you suggesting, Alex?" Oluwole asked with concern.
"Access to our medical nanites, crystal technology, comm probes, and traveler design without beam access, that sort of thing," Alex replied.
"But no weaponry?" Oluwole asked.
"No, definitely not," Alex replied.
"The technology I'm talking about will disrupt Saul's industrial base, much as it did New Terra's when Meridian technology was introduced.
But better to do it now while the Earthers are rebuilding rather than later."
"I would concur with that," Julian added.
"Should I assume that you want us to go back, Alex?" Oluwole asked.
"Unless you have something better to do," Alex said offhand.
"Who knew what I was getting myself into when my friends and I abandoned our explorership?" Oluwole said, chuckling.
"A fascinating life," Francis said, grinning at him.
"I'm ready, Alex. How do we outfit this trip?"
"I'm thinking you'll need a Trident escort. I want the Saul government to have a vision of technology's future," Alex replied.
"Won't that infuriate them?" Oluwole asked. "Seeing what's possible but not having access to it?"
"What do you think, Sayers?" Alex asked.
He waited while the two men exchanged thoughts. It took them a while before they came to a conclusion.
"No," Francis replied. "It will push them harder to employ their technology evenly across new industries and in support of their population. They'll want to impress you so that you extend the next level of technology to them."
"That was as Alex and I thought," Julian said.
"You already decided all this," Oluwole said, glancing from Julian to Alex and back.
Renee was laughing quietly while Julian said, "It was one of our considerations."
"You'll need Edmus, Jodlin, and Esteban," Alex mused. "They'll be familiar individuals, and you'll need Sades, engineers, techs, and supplies. Julian will provide Esteban and the Sades with a list of allowed items. The Reaver and Trident's controllers will contain the design specifications and manuals that the Earthers will need."
"What?" Francis asked, noticing Julian was grinning.
"We'll be breaking out the gen machines once again," Julian explained.
"The what?" Oluwole asked.
Rene delivered a fresh cup of tea to Francis and took a stance behind Julian's chair, placing her hands on his shoulders.
"What seems like a lifetime ago," she said, "Julian and I made the momentous decision to lift up New Terra's technology in order for them to manufacture the material necessary to repair the Reaver, which was damaged by the attack of a dark traveler. From his box on the bridge, Julian communicated with engineers on planet to build a series of machines, with three increasingly complex levels. The final stage was able to produce many of the items we needed. They were dubbed the Gen Machines, and Alex and I have carried sets of them around with us ever since."
"You never know when they might come in handy," Alex added.
Chapter 27 Herrican.
"Ellie's ship has been upgraded with the new crystals, Alex," Tatia said during an evening meal. "Any reason that you're selecting her trident?"
"A couple," Alex replied, attacking a fresh serving dish with gusto.
"Would you care to be less enigmatic?" Tatia asked, reaching for a handful of rolls.
"Yumi Tanaka, for one. She can visit with her parents while I'm there," Alex replied.
"Any others?" Tatia asked, pausing to catch Alex's eyes.
"An evaluation," Alex replied.
Tatia regarded Alex a moment longer and resumed consuming her meal. She ruminated on the sort of evaluation that Alex might be considering. It wouldn't be testing Ellie's capabilities as a trident captain. She was outstanding in that regard. It occurred to her that Alex had the same concerns she did. If a fleet, many times the size of their squadron, was formed, Tatia would want to assign groups of the new warships to operate under her trident captains. Those thoughts brought up the question of what officer levels would accompany the new warships. Only New Terra had been told that Tatia must approve their senior commanders. And in that regard, she wouldn't worry about Herrican, who would put their captains through a rigorous selection process before they were elevated. However, the Confederation's senior officers would be question marks.
"I'll be interested to hear your evaluation when you return," Tatia said, mopping up a serving dish with the remains of a roll.
While Alex finished his meal, he signaled Ellie to prepare the Redemption for launch to Herrican the following morning.
"Have crew pick up our baggage at 20 hours this evening, Captain," he sent. "We'll transfer aboard in the morning."
The next morning, Alex wasted no time boarding the warship with Rene and Julian. Alex had ordered the twins to remain behind so they could spend time with their partners.
"We're headed for Herrican," Alex told them, "not the deep dark."
When the three Omnians walked through the Redemption's corridors, they found it alive with the hustle and bustle of crew. Alex had mentioned to Ellie that a full crew wouldn't be necessary. Obviously, she had ignored his suggestion, or her senior commander had. Nonetheless, he decided to keep his thoughts to himself.
"The captain's on the bridge, sir," a new Terran-built lieutenant said to Alex as he led them forward once they attained the main deck.
"You have the ship's guest quarters. Your baggage is already there." Each trident had a more than comfortable suite, designed to accommodate a squadron's commodore or visiting admiral. The rooms weren't as expansive as the couple's suite aboard the Freedom, but they were luxurious compared to the small cabin they had inhabited for nearly a year on the Liberator. Once Alex and Rene were shown to their cabin, the lieutenant asked Julian,
"We have a choice of accommodations for you to consider, sir. I can show them to you now, if you wish."
"Don't worry about me, Lieutenant," Julian replied. "I can always find a closet or supply room if I need some privacy."
When the youthful lieutenant's mouth hung open for several moments, Julian took pity on him, patting his shoulder and saying,
"I'll be fine, Lieutenant. I don't tend to sleep much."
The lieutenant exited in a bewildered state, and Rene said to him,
"Julian, you're incorrigible. That young man doesn't know whether you're teasing or not.
I thought to give him an interesting story to tell his crewmates. Somewhere along the line, someone will disabuse him of the notion that I sleep in a closet.
Alex raised an eyebrow at Julian, making a note to talk to him later. His friend was usually gracious and understanding with humans. The flight to Hurricane was uneventful, and as the warship transited into Hellebore space, Julian issued several messages.
"I'm sorry to say, Alex and Renee, the Sojourn is on assignment, and Teague and Ginny are aboard."
"Oh, I'm disappointed that we'll miss them," Renee said.
"President Lachaud is looking forward to your landing, Alex, and will clear her schedule for an extended meeting, if you so desire," Julian added.
"On another note, there's a new orbital station dedicated to ship construction. It sits outward of Hurricane, short of the inner belt."
"Size?" Alex asked.
"The configuration indicates 3 large bays and 2 small ones."
"Recently built to fulfill the agreement," Alex postulated.
"Undoubtedly," Julian agreed.
"Tridents in the system?" Alex asked.
"Underway," Julian replied, indicating he was tallying the tridents while reviewing the telemetry data on all ships in the Hellebore system.
9 in system, Alex, and possibly more under construction."
9, Alex echoed in surprise.
"That's a good thing," he added, but he didn't sound enthused.
"A more robust economy and greater population," Julian commented.
"Alex Omnia started from scratch," Renee said, intuiting the reason for Alex's reaction.
"And the Dishnia weren't much help constructing our platform."
Alex chuckled lightly, his mind conjuring an image of Dishnia warriors in environment suits, assembling the station's girders in place.
3 days later, Alex's traveler sat down in front of the home that the Sui Sui had built for Renee and him many years ago. Its blue-green and white luminescent walls appeared as if they were laid yesterday.
"I never thought I would miss those colors," Renee said, as Alex's father, mother, and sister charged out of the house.
After hugs and kisses all around, the group moved into the house.
"Where are Julian and Cordelia's children?" Renee asked.
"At university, all of them," Katie said, laughing.
"They live on campus. It saves them commuting time."
"Look what you miss, you three, while you're out saving our worlds," Christie said glibly. She meant it as a tease, but instantly saw that her jibe had struck at the emotions of the threesome.
"I'm sorry, that was a terrible thing to say. I'm jealous of the exciting lives you're leading."
"Christie, those exciting lives you think we're leading have periods of pure terror, which sometimes fall to levels of quiet desperation," Renee replied quietly.
"Yes, well, Alex," Duggan said, attempting to change the subject,
"tell us which of the reports we've received are true. The only common theme is that you located and destroyed a second sphere."
"Which goes to show that you often can't believe what you hear," Alex replied.
"We cornered the sphere, Duggan, and it blew itself up and took one of the new Terran tridents with it," Renee said.
The family members murmured their surprise. The thought of the Nual sacrificing themselves and their monstrous sphere rather than being captured seemed unnatural.
"So why are you here, Alex, and for how long?" Katie said with interest.
"Researching a theory," Alex replied.
"Alex shares his dreams with me," Renee explained, which had the family members' mouths dropping open.
"It's true," she added, shrugging her shoulders as if to excuse the oddity.
"Anyway, he dreamed of a strange division of lights and no lights in space, and I sent him to Julian."
"Alex shared his dream, or rather he shared Renee's report of his dream with me," Julian continued, picking up the narrative.
"We believe that he struck upon an idea of how to pinpoint where the Nual territory might begin. We're here to check on his concept via the observatory's accumulated telemetry data." "'Is it my imagination?' Christy asked her parents. "'Or has my usually less than voluble brother become more taciturn lately?'
"'Hush, Christy,' Duggan said, eyeing his son.
"'What aren't you telling us, Alex?'
Alex stared at his father. Somewhere in the intervening years after he'd left the Oystis system, he'd become his father's keeper, along with the rest of humankind, without realizing it. It made him feel much older than his years. Duggan glanced at Julian and then Renee, who ducked her head.
"'Oh, black space,' Duggan whispered, worried about the reason his son was reticent to speak.
"'This isn't about a single sphere, is it?' Christy asked. "'Something about the probes has frightened all of you.'
"'We're finding them in every system, operational or not, Sayers,' Julian explained. "'One was destroyed by our people at Sol.'
"'You sent a ship to Sol?' Katie asked.
"'Olawale and Francis returned with Edmus Jodlin and Esteban, their Sade partner,' Renee explained. "'And they were pleased to report there's been an incredible burgeoning of democracy that replaced United Earth.'
"'A probe in every system,' Duggan murmured, dropping his head to think. "'That takes a long time. It takes a commitment to the future, which means an ancient civilization,' Duggan said, looking up at his son.
Alex met his father's eyes and sadly nodded in agreement.
Katie and Christy gripped each other's hand.
"'That's what all the new contracts are about,' Christy said. We know Harrigan has signed a deal with Omnia. Word is, so has New Terra.
And the Confederation, of all places, Renee added, shaking her head at the incredulity of it.
One correction, Christy, Julian interjected. These agreements aren't with Omnia. They're with Omnia ships.
That's you, isn't it, Alex? Katie asked.
Yes, Alex admitted. "'All these warships from every local human world will be under your control?' Duggan asked.
"'Indirectly,' Alex replied. "'But the fighting, if it comes to that, will fall to the senior naval commanders.'
"'But where they go and whether or not they fight will be your decision,' Duggan pursued.
Alex nodded, and Duggan looked at his son with sympathy. When Alex was young, Duggan imagined a future for his son punctuated with successes, a family, and, most of all, peace. He never envisioned and never would have wished for one that saw his son carrying such incredible responsibilities on his shoulders.
Silence descended on the family group until Katie jumped up and said, "'Well, I think Tay and a small repast is in order.'
While the humans ate, the conversation turned to small talk about the children, their studies, and Christie's career. Alex and Renee turned in early for their morning meeting with Therese. Duggan, Katie, and Christie took the opportunity to learn the details of the past year from Julian. His stories became the stuff of their nightmares when they slept. After midnight, Julian left the house and walked to the family's gazebo. He stood looking over the ocean waves racing toward the beach below. Their white crests were highlighted by Harrigan's moons. From his colonel he spooled memories of the family's time on Harrigan. He relived his emergence into an avatar, his growing liaison with Cordelia, the encounters with the Earthers, the adoption of the Idona orphans, the birth of Teague, and many more. He smiled at the pleasant depth of memories that had been accumulated in a few short years compared to his age. But Julian's smile was soon lost. The future looked dark to him. There was an ancient and powerful race allied against humans and Sades, who appeared as youngsters to the entities they faced. "'Are we capable of being clever enough, my friend?' Julian thought, addressing Alex. I believe the new Al won't allow us a single misstep. In the morning, the parents and sister awoke to find Alex, Renee, and Julian gone, their traveler having silently arrived and departed not long after dawn. Alex had risen early, made his way down to the beach, and spoken with the new first. He had a polite and extended conversation with the Sui Sui leader. but when Alex left, he felt unsatisfied. His friend, who had fought with him at Libra and convinced the Hives to transfer to Herrikan, was gone.
"I wanted to apologize to everyone again for my foolish comment," Christy lamented to her mother and father over morning meal.
"They know you didn't mean it," Katie said, patting her daughter's hand.
"They're scared," Duggan said, staring into his large mug of tea. "And that should terrify every human in Sade."
"Then we'll just have to hope that the spirit of Alexander continues to ride with our son," Katie said, trying to lift everyone's mood.
"I think Alex will be better served by the likes of Julian, Z, Miranda, his senior commanders, the rest of the Sades, and the thousands who believe in what he's trying to do," Christy said fervently.
"I'll echo that," Duggan replied.
The Liberator's traveler dropped swiftly onto the manicured front landscape of the Naval Academy's administration building, disgorging its passengers before lifting quickly to return to the warship. President Therese and Admiral Sheila Reynard came down the steps of the building to greet them. It was a warm reunion for old friends. Alex and Renee joked with the two Herrikan women about the elevated positions they presently occupied.
"I think I preferred the medical profession," Therese quipped.
"You're working at saving lives, Therese," Alex teased. "It's just in a wholesale manner rather than one at a time."
"Don't listen to Therese," Sheila said. "She loves being in charge.
Always wanted to be the one giving orders." "That's the way I remember it," Alex agreed.
"Enough about me," Therese said. "Inside, everyone, where it's cooler."
"Julian counts 9 tridents," Alex said as they walked.
"Accurate as usual," Sheila said, hooking her arm into Julian's. "And 3 are under construction."
"When do you think you'll need your share, Alex?" Therese asked.
"I'll have to tell you later, Therese. We have some research to conduct," Alex replied.
"How is the Meridian training proceeding?"
"What Meridian training?" Sheila asked as the doors of the admin building slid aside and the blast of cool air hit them.
"The Council's envoy arrived and announced they were constructing new facilities, and we could send them the plans to copy our academy. Furthermore, they wanted some top administrators and trainers."
Alex stopped dead in his tracks.
"Alex, we gave them everything they needed, and that's the last we heard from them. That was about a year ago," Sheila said, lifting her hands palm up as if to ask what else could she do.
Alex stared at Julian, and the 3 women could imagine the fierce exchange between the Blood and Crystal brothers.
"Where is the Confederation's Naval Academy?" Alex asked.
"According to our Sades, it's at Bellamond," Therese replied.
"Orbital platforms, which are producing their tridents, are also there," Julian added a moment later.
The group adjourned to a comfortable private room reserved for senior commanders, and the Omnians updated the Herrikans on the events of the past year. All of them.
When Alex finished, he regarded Sheila.
"What do you see as your role in the upcoming expedition, Sheila?"
"To my regret, Alex, I've been directed to remain at Herrikan. Depending on the number of tridents we're able to send your way, there will probably be a Commodore or two."
"Anyone we know?" Alex asked.
"Edouard Manet and Miko Tanaka are shortlisted with 3 others," Sheila replied.
And Alex placed a hand over his eyes, a small groan escaping his lips.
"That's the way of it, Alex," Therese said with her usual firm bedside manner. "If the danger is as great as you surmise, we'll need our best on this expedition."
"There's always the possibility of negotiations," Sheila said encouragingly, looking at Julian.
"Learning a new alien language sounds intriguing, Admiral, until you realize that the only reason your enemies are coming to the negotiation table is that they want to take you with them when they detonate," Julian replied, a sour expression twisting his lips.
"If Edouard and Miko have the Commodore positions, does this mean you plan to retire the No Retreat and the Last Stand?" Alex asked.
"Unless you can use the carriers in your expedition, Alex," Sheila replied. "They're obsolete. They've served their purpose.
"Let me think on that," Alex said. "How much would you want for them?" Therese laughed.
"Thinking of one-credit deals, are you, Alex?"
"It's a good price, but I can afford more now," Alex replied. "They might have a better use than sitting idle somewhere in your system. By the way, I understand the Sojourn is out on an exploration of its own."
"Yes, sorry you missed them, Alex," Therese said.
"They due back soon?" Alex asked.
"They should be entering their target system in a few days. Why?" Sheila asked, with rising concern.
"You might want to load a sting ship with a banisher from our trident. Odds are there will be a probe in that system, and you don't want it reporting on your explorer ship's investigations, which it inevitably will do." A small gasp escaped Renee's lips, and Therese's pale skin turned even whiter. Sheila stood up and turned away to focus on her implant, issuing the orders that would send a sting ship with a knowledgeable Sayd and an Omnian banisher on its way. The group continued to talk through the morning, a midday meal, and into half of the afternoon before they exhausted the exchange of critical information. At which time Alex ordered their traveler. It was a quick goodbye on the steps of the admin building, and the Omnians were away, headed toward the observation orbital platform.
"Why do I think that each time I see that threesome that it might be the last time?" Therese lamented, watching the traveler lift.
Sheila glanced at her friend. Hellebore's light shone through Therese's red hair, amplifying its fiery nature.
"Because every time it has a good chance of being true," Sheila said, and the two women stared at each other, hoping against the odds that it wouldn't come true this time.
Alex, Renee, and Julian exited the traveler in the observation platform's bay. The orbital station was built to conduct a search for new home planets for the Herrikans. Its first director was the Sayd, Willem, who now co-commanded the explorer ship Sojourn with Captain Asuazastal. A Sayd met the threesome as they exited the airlock. He had midnight black skin littered with tiny colored dots ranging from blue-white to yellow to red. His synth skin resembled the nighttime stars against the deep dark. Jupiter was a Sayd who had plied the depths of space for more than a century, guiding a freighter. It was his love of space that had kept him sane. The freighter's captains were a succession of individuals who rarely communicated with Jupiter. But that was fine with him. He had little time for humans. His fascination with the origination and transformation of stars and galaxies through the eons claimed his every free moment. Jupiter spent his enormous capabilities collecting every scrap of information he could locate on the evolution of stars, their deaths, and the creation of new systems through accretion. Several times throughout the decades, Jupiter requested upgrades to his memory crystal. He was fortunate that his captains failed to ask the reason for the requests and simply approved them. With each increase, he was able to delve into more and more of the intricacies of the movement of galaxies and the interplay of gravitational forces, including those that affected a system's celestial bodies.
"Alex, Renee, Julian, I'm honored."
"I'm called Jupiter," the Sayd announced, giving the Omnians a Meridian leader's salute, dipping his head and placing a hand on his chest where a human heart would beat. The threesome dipped their heads in acceptance. Each of them had received Jupiter's original ID, which was Theodosius.
"Good name change," Renee sent to Alex and Julian.
Alex described to Jupiter in detail the type of search he required, and the Sayd stood politely, recording every word.
"How long will it take you to prepare your equipment and scan for what I'm requesting?" Alex asked.
"Sir, we've collected telemetry data for 2 decades, Jupiter explained. "Every increment of that data has been stored in this observatory's crystal banks. As we updated the scanning equipment with improved sensitivity and strength, we expanded the data storage to accommodate the greater volume of information we were accumulating. With respect, sir, we possess all the data you require. It only requires that I program a query to search for the particular signal that Julian has just passed me, and I will have your answer. May I show you?
Yes, please, Jupiter. On the holovid, if you would, Alex requested, and Julian and he grinned at each other. The Omnians turned to observe the enormous holovid that Jupiter initiated. The Sage's eyes briefly fluttered with the extent of the data flooding from the memory banks through his kernel, even though the query had reduced the stored data by orders of magnitude. The holovid lit with a massive number of dots of light.
"These are your probes, sir," Jupiter announced. "I'm highlighting only the star systems that contain one of these alien devices."
"If you won't say it, Alex, I will," Renee whispered. "Black space."
"I must admit, sir, under few circumstances would I have postulated that number," Jupiter said, staring at the display. Julian augmented the holovid with bright dots of yellow light. "The worlds of Herrikan, Omnia, and New Terra," he said. Next he inserted a red point, adding, "Olasa." Finally, Julian drew a simple blue line and then a much more complex one. "Alex, the straight line is the approach path of the first sphere toward the Confederation system. The multi-jointed line represents the path along which we chased the second sphere."
"Fortune favored you, Sayers, that you survived at the insidious nature of your foe," Jupiter said.
Alex knew the Sage would have the truth of what happened at the final system, where the second sphere was cornered.
"Kind of you to say, Jupiter," Alex replied, laying a firm hand on the Sage's shoulder.
Julian's added touches allowed Alex to orient himself within the display. He stepped close to the holovid, recalling Renee's story of his dream, and eyed the short blue line. The first sphere had arrived in the Hellebore system to scour Herrikan, when it was known as the Cetus Colony. Alex reversed the course and flew through the display. Jupiter watched Alex drive past thousands of stars where the probes lurked. His data query had retrieved them based on their unique broadcast signal. The probe-laced stars whirled past in a dizzying display, too fast for most humans to comprehend or measure, but the Sages were tracking the distance that Alex traveled. Suddenly the lights winked out, and Alex reversed his course until he positioned the view where the final display of lights was found.
"The wall," Alex marveled.
"That's an enormous wall, Alex," Julian said. His kernel was involved in analyzing the width and breadth of the space that the data displayed.
"Jupiter, what are these faint points of light?" Alex asked, peering closely at the display.
The ones he highlighted in the display were found in the dark area, where they stood out.
"Is the data displaying probes? And if so, why are they so faint?"
"One moment, Alex," Jupiter replied. The Sage entered a fugue state while he searched the data points for more detailed telemetry.
"Alex, I can tell you that these curious data points are found in the dark and the light areas. Those in the bright area aren't easily observable for human eyes among the points of light. However, to your question, my original query displayed data points that matched Julian's parameters within 95% accuracy. The items that you're indicating are near matches, which fall outside that accuracy. They were included because of relevance."
"Jupiter, what's the breakdown of the numbers of these nearly relevant points between the two areas?" Alex asked.
"I can confirm 23 within the area dominated by the probes, and another 13 probable in the dark area, sir."
Alex looked at Julian for his thoughts. The Sage replied, "The probes have a singular broadcast frequency or process, and these others are another form of communication similar to the probes."
"Spheres?" Alex asked.
"Possibly," Julian replied.
"Julian, share with Jupiter the signal from the Libran sphere."
"What have I received?" Jupiter asked Julian, since the Sage couldn't interpret the data. "This is the first sphere's broadcast signal sent before it detonated," Julian replied. "We've been unable to decipher it or even separate the encoded data from the type of carrier signal. Do not attempt to break it down. Allow a route comparison to the telemetry data collected." Jupiter ran a comparison exclusively against the 36 anomalous data points that the query had produced. "Julian's broadcast signal is a 98% match, sir, to all 36 points," Jupiter replied. Alex slapped his hands together, creating a great boom, and he hugged a surprised Jupiter. "Excellent work," Julian said, by way of explaining Alex's reaction. "Might I inquire precisely what I've displayed that has you so elated, sir?" Jupiter asked. "I request this because it would seem to me that we've potentially identified the location of the Nual civilization. And if the vast area of space where no probe signals exist is any indication, it's enormous. In addition, I appear to have identified for you a significant number of the aliens' spheres, both within the Nual territory and without." "To quote Admiral Tuchenko," Alex replied, grinning, "when you begin to know your opponent is when you begin to defeat them." "I presume you have these data points and the telemetry details, Julian," Alex said. "You think too much of my capabilities, Alex. There is more data here than three times my entire memory crystal capacity. I've directed the information to the Liberator's memory banks. The upload will be completed soon," Julian sent in reply. "Jupiter, you've been invaluable. I'll inform President Therese and Willem of your much-appreciated assistance," Alex said, shaking the Sage's hand. "I don't believe I've done anything that any other Sage couldn't have done for you on this platform, Alex. But if you're feeling generous, I would ask a favor," Jupiter replied. "Ask away," Alex replied. "A second explorer ship is undergoing its trials. I would like to be considered the Sage to co-command it on its maiden voyage." "I'll pass along your request, Jupiter, and I wish you good fortune," Alex said. Jupiter beamed, literally. Light glowed from underneath his synth skin, and it passed through tiny dots in his midnight skin, making the stars shine. Chapter 28 Mock Fight. Yumi Tanaka enjoyed a full day with her parents, but Edward and Miko were anxious to talk to Ellie. The parents asked Ellie to join them for dinner on the second evening. The Harrigan captains wanted the latest updates from her regarding the chase and cornering of the sphere. In addition, they were interested in spending some precious hours with an old friend, someone who had been part of Alex's workings since he arrived at the Libran colony. For her part, Ellie was enjoying the dinner and company. Compared to the frugal quarters aboard a Trident, she was dining in a carrier's salon that was luxuriously appointed. "What do you think are your chances for the Commodore positions?" Ellie asked Miko and Edward. "Probably excellent," Miko replied. "We have pull with the Admiral." Ellie laughed at the characterization of a fellow Dagger pilot who had risen through the ranks with them. Her laughter died when she caught Yumi's wince, and Ellie glanced at Edward. "Our daughter believes that she should be the only one of the family to endanger her life," Edward commented, leaning over to kiss Yumi's temple. "Parents should stay out of harm's way." Yumi scowled, but made no comment. "It's normal to want to protect our loved ones," Ellie said to ease Yumi's discomfort, "especially when they insist on doing a job they're qualified to handle." The family knew Ellie was referring to her partner Etienne, who protected Alex and Renee. There was often no more dangerous place to be than standing next to Alex Racine. "But what about your carriers?" Yumi asked plaintively. "They're outmoded, daughter," Edward replied. "If we continue to act as their captains, we'll be passed over for promotion. This is our opportunity, and we must take it.
We have long lives yet to be enjoyed.
Yumi, we could be building these forces for no reason.
The Nual might face us and decide to negotiate, Miko said.
She looked at Ellie for support on this point, but Ellie returned her plea with a stoic expression.
Edouard was about to ask Ellie if she would like another drink, but the Trident captain held up a hand to signal an incoming calm.
"We have to cut our gathering short," Ellie said to Edouard, Miko, and Yumi. "Alex is requesting we launch soonest."
"Where are you headed?" Edouard asked.
"Presumably we're returning to Harrigan," Ellie replied.
"Has Alex said so?" Miko asked.
"No, which is why I'm waiting for confirmation," Ellie replied.
"We came here to investigate something that Alex seems to be chasing."
"What? I'm not sure, but he visited the observatory platform this evening."
Edouard and Miko exchanged glances, wondering what the future held for them and their daughter if Alex was on the hunt once again.
Ellie sent a recall to the crew via the Liberator's controller. She ordered her traveler pilots to collect them from the planet and the local stations as quickly as possible.
Ellie and Yumi had dined aboard the Last Stand, which enabled them to get a lift from a carrier traveler to return to their warship.
Hours later, Ellie announced to Alex that they were ready to depart.
It was the early morning hours, but Alex and Julian had joined Ellie and Yumi on the bridge until the third watch, who was standing by, began the remainder of their shift.
"Where to, Alex?" Ellie asked, assuming nothing.
"Bellamond, Captain."
Yumi glanced questioningly at Ellie, who ignored her, saying, "Report our exit from orbit, pilot, and thread us through traffic. When you're clear, take a course for an efficient exit from Hellebor in Bellamond's direction, and have the controller calculate our transit. After that, you can retire."
While Yumi worked, Ellie said to Alex, "I hear that they might abandon the carriers."
"Heard that too," Alex replied.
"I'm trying to figure out if we can use them to support the Freedom and any freighters the other worlds supply."
"Alex, even if we can't use the carriers, they're carrying a tremendous number of travelers."
"Black space, how could I have missed that?" Alex said with heat.
Ellie chuckled at the intensity of Alex's statement.
"Could be you've had a little too much on your mind lately. I don't know, like the Nual."
Alex glanced at Julian, who protested, "Just because I have a fabulous processing ability and an enormous data repository doesn't mean that I haven't been preoccupied either."
"Good suggestion, Captain," Alex replied, appending a note about the travelers to the one concerning the carriers that was stored in his ever-full implants.
"President Therese and I might strike a deal to have Harrigan lend us the fighters to house in the Freedom's spare bays, or we could purchase the travelers outright. Come to think of it, neither of those ideas would do us any good without the pilots. Let me think on that."
Alex eyed Julian, and the Sage replied, "I have managed to make a note of the need for that discussion in case your human implants fail to remind you."
Alex laughed and wished everyone a good night.
"The O.S. Liberator has entered the Bellamond system, sir," the captain of the house liner said to Katrina Pascoe.
Katrina glanced with concern at her partner, Gino Diamante.
"Captain, can you determine the principals who might be aboard?" Gino asked.
"Negative, Council Leader. As I understand warship protocols, the Omnian Trident won't allow an open comm with its ship's controller.
I can request the names of the principals from the controller, but it will be the prerogative of the captain to grant my request."
"Is there a difficulty, sir?" the captain asked.
"You're new aboard, Captain," Katrina said, "but I'll remind you that this liner is the Resplendent, which once housed the Sayed Allura.
And I can think of only one reason an Omnian warship has entered the Bellamond system," Gino added.
"Alex Racine has come to inspect our efforts," the captain supplied.
"Precisely, Captain," Gino replied.
At that same moment, Julian was updating Alex, Renee, and Ellie.
Telemetry indicates the meridian footprint on Bellamond is minimal.
Has the planet recovered enough to start a new colony? Renee asked.
It doesn't appear to be a colony as yet, Sir, Julian replied.
The only evident constructions on planet are the Naval Academy and its support facilities, Julian replied.
Also, I detect three orbital stations around Bellamond. None of them appear as sophisticated passenger transfer platforms. They're dedicated to ship construction.
Captain, we've been pinged by 27 Confederation Tridents requesting more data than our ship ID, Yumi said.
Ellie waited for Alex's permission to respond, but he was staring into space, and Yumi glanced from her captain to Alex, wishing to understand the reason for the delay.
Julian, ship positions, Alex requested.
The holovid sprang to life.
Blue dot, us, red dot, Bellamond, yellow dots, enemy tridents, Julian said, smiling, anticipating Alex's idea.
Vectors on the enemy ships, Captain, Alex requested, eliciting a predatory grin from Ellie.
Yumi, who was not on board with the concept, nonetheless dutifully added trajectory lines to the Confederation warships.
If we make straight for Bellamond, Alex, we'll pass behind these three tridents within 13.8 hours, Ellie said, adding a translucent sphere around them.
Perfect, Captain. I'll leave you and your pilot to design your sneak attack. When you have a shot lined up on any one of the warships, you're to ping them with a message that indicates you fired. Understood?
What are my rules of engagement, Captain? Yumi asked, fascinated how quickly Julian and Ellie had caught on to Alex's idea.
Ellie looked at Alex, who said, Lieutenant Tanaka, you're to attack, create havoc, and score hits, but you're to survive the encounter. Captain, warn me before you attack.
Understood, sir, Ellie replied, straightening her stance.
When Alex and Julian left the bridge, Yumi said to Ellie,
It appears we're testing the Meridian's training. This should be interesting.
No, my young pilot, Ellie thought. Alex is testing the Meridians and us.
Senior Captain Descartes was whiling away the time, indulging in one of his favorite pastimes, calculating potential conflicts and the strategies to win them. To his delight, this afternoon it handed him a perfect opportunity to test his designs and his squadron's readiness. An Omnian warship was headed for Bellamond and would pass to their rear.
"Captains," Descartes sent, "we'll use the approaching Omnian Trident for a war game exercise."
"Shouldn't we seek permission from the Commandant to engage in this type of operation?" Descartes's junior captain asked.
"What has Commandant Dorian repeatedly told us about testing our skills?" Descartes asked.
"That we must sharpen them now while we have the opportunity before we might truly need them," the junior captain dutifully replied.
"And ask yourselves, captains," Descartes said, "who might be aboard this Omnian warship? A lone captain desiring to tour our facilities? The probabilities of that are too small to mention. No, it's a principal. Perhaps Admiral Tachenko or maybe Alex Racine. This is an opportunity to test our skills on a worthy adversary, or do you wish to wait until we face the Nual?"
The Sade, Descartes, was freed from his box 2 years ago and continued to serve aboard a house passenger liner during the following year of indenture. Secretly, he yearned to fly travelers, swirling them endlessly through space, swift and maneuverable. When the agreement to produce Trident warships was introduced and approved by the Council, Descartes realized a better opportunity. At first he sought to pilot a Trident, but when he discovered that a Hurricane would be in charge of the naval training facilities, Descartes realized the possibility of an even greater goal. It would be possible for a Sade to captain a warship. Sifting through his attack options, Descartes chose a three-pronged maneuver that suited his small squadron, and he signaled his intention to the other two captains.
Don't shift your ship out of formation, or otherwise signal our intentions to treat the Omnian ship as a combatant until I start the exercise, Descartes sent. Ellie was about to signal Alex and Julian that her attack run would soon begin, when she saw the pair walk through the bridge access way. Of course you two were monitoring our position, Ellie thought. Their close attention underlined her earlier thought. Alex and Julian were evaluating her as much as they were the Meridians. Before the attack was initiated, Ellie reviewed Alex's engagement rules. He'd said to attack, create havoc, and score hits, but that they were to survive. It would be a difficult balance to strike, but it insisted on a real-world scenario versus a game strategy. Ellie would leave the intricate flight maneuvers to Yumi while she orchestrated the tactics. However, Ellie could envision an upcoming challenge with her youthful pilot. In the heat of battle, Yumi might choose to pursue and win, forgetting Alex's orders to survive. It would be her job to stay Yumi's hand, if necessary, at the crucial moment. The Redemption's holovid displayed the four warships. Ellie had marked the adversaries in colors. Every Omnian senior commander and captain had adopted Alex's preferences to use colors to identify entities, rather than number designations in scenarios. "Lieutenant, Blue Leader will probably be the first to move when we attack," Ellie said. "Be prepared to target red or orange for your first pass. If your attack is successful, your next maneuver will depend on their defensive pattern. Again, try for either the red or orange adversary. Blue Leader will probably be the toughest target." As the chronometer ticked down, Ellie briefly eyed Alex. Julian and he stood well back, watching the holovid display. It was as she thought. They would be silent observers. "Now, Lieutenant," Ellie said quietly. Yumi initiated the attack run she'd programmed into the controller. The Trident swung in a tight arc, chasing the Meridian squadron's rear. Precious moments were lost to Descartes. The Omnian warship had the greater velocity and had swung to the attack before he'd initiated his maneuver. "So we play, Captain," Descartes thought, even as he signaled a new strategy to his captains. Yumi witnessed the accuracy of her captain's prediction. Blue Leader was the first to arc above the ecliptic, probably hoping to come behind her after the initial pass. Fractionally slower, Red Antagonist cut right and slightly below the ecliptic, which would complicate her attack. "For a recent trainee, Blue Leader is not acting like a newbie," Yumi thought, as she signaled the controller. The Liberator's orange opponent failed to react quickly compared to the other two Confederation or CO warships, and that spelled its end. As the Meridian warship swung to the left and attempted to dip below the ecliptic, Yumi's trident shot past it. The controller beeped twice, indicating it had scored two hits on the enemy. "Captain Descartes," the junior captain sent, "I've received a message from the Omnian trident. It says, 'You're dead. Fall off.'" "Do as ordered, Captain. Remain calm silent," Descartes replied. When the Omnian moved first, he'd calculated that one ship was already lost and accurately identified which one it would be. He found it incredibly fascinating that the Omnian captain had the same idea that he had. "Or did the idea originate from a leader who is aboard?" Descartes thought, as his ship closed its arc above the ecliptic, completing its loop. Having taken one Meridian ship out of the game but recognizing the Blue Leader's gambit, Yumi opted not to play. She stayed near the ecliptic, continued her swing inward, and came parallel to her trident's original course to Bellamond. Directly ahead and easily within reach for Yumi, before the enemy could gain her tail, was a dense line of asteroids. They weren't part of Bellamond's twin asteroid belts, but there was enough rock to serve her purpose. Shooting under the heavy pile of asteroids, each of them dwarfing Yumi's ship, she slewed the trident around and retraced her course.
In the time it took to accomplish that, the Meridian warships had arrived. They took up positions about 45 degrees apart on the opposite side of the asteroids and remained on the ecliptic. Yumi grinned. It was what she'd hoped the enemy would do. They had stationed their ships too close to